holding the price meant better margin. It meant better consistency in the pricing strategies. It gave them just a better way to say, no, 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 we really are the ones you can count on for not only what you bid and we propose and we see through that process, but all the inevitable variables that will come up even once we start.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. Most people think of customer experience as providing the best customer service, but in reality, it's much bigger than that. It's about removing the friction and choppiness from each channel. It's making the experience personalized while not compromising on scalability. The customer experience innovation requires a rounded approach, starting from your team alignment, offerings, processes, and the product bundle. In today's episode, we have our guest, Kirk Thompson from Chief Outsiders, who discusses how team alignment may be necessary to align with your customer experience strategy. He also touches on removing the choppiness in the sales and operational cycle by systemizing the processes. Finally, he shares several stories where businesses had hit the wall in their growth journey and required a refined product and pricing model to grow. Let me introduce Kirk to you. Kirk Thompson is a 30-year marketer, having led marketing teams and growth strategies for retail and hospitality giants, winning branding and innovation awards across corporate roles, and speaking at industry conferences and marketing organizations. Today, he is focused on building revenue performance, go-to-market, and content strategies for professional services firms and distribution companies as part of Chief Outsiders, a national management consulting firm. Passionate about the customer experience, Kirk works with small and medium-sized businesses ready to accelerate growth to the next inflection point. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, Kirk, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sam. It's great to be here.
Of course, my pleasure. Just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and current focus?
I would love to. I'd like to think of most of my career as having dealt with the major verbs of life. Eat, okay. Drink, design, shop, build, travel. I feel like short of a couple of those verbs, I dealt with most of the major things that I think people enjoy and are challenged by and just treat as part of their lifestyle. Different types of companies, a lot of corporate background, but I evolved several years ago into a consultant because I loved that whole problem-solving aspect that was part of taking a business and really driving it into a growth space. And that has led really to where my current focus is, helping businesses that have maybe hit a sticking wall, if that makes sense, Sam.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of just get to that point where the growth doesn't seem to come quite as naturally.
Yeah.
It's not as organic to the business. They've got to press through. They got to figure out more problems to solve, more new territories to go into. And that just, to me, is a ripe territory for really helping businesses grow. And from my lens, through the perspective of really dissecting what's a new customer. What's a new customer? What's a new customer area? What's a new customer group? What's a way to really take that customer experience to a whole different level and open up new revenue growth?
So you might be stealing my questions here, because that was going to be my next question, right? I was going to ask you.
Okay. I am happy to anticipate your next conversation. I really am. It's funny. I think it's just a natural evolution. And I like the nature of telling my story, but kind of tilting it over towards where I think the most interesting business problems and business opportunities are. And that has been really through that lens of customer. It's just one of those things I've honed through all my career. And I find that as I am a consultant and I work with a wide array of businesses, so everything from construction and chemicals to retail to manufacturers to real estate to services, I find that as long as we come down to the common conversation about, hey, are you really getting as much out of your customers as you can? Are you focused on what your customers are going to need next? And where are the next sets of customers that fuel the next round of growth? Then typically that bridges into whatever that company's category is and helps them navigate through that inflection point they're in where they're trying to figure out how to double their growth or double their territory.
Okay, amazing. So basically my next question was going to be, what is your perspective on growth? And you probably answered that, right? Do you have anything else to add in that? We are looking to see what growth means to you.
Sure. You know, growth to me, I think once upon a time, I thought growth was purely around sales and revenue and you know, great efficiencies and where's my bottom line. And those are certainly important metrics to me, but I like to think of growth much more through the lens of where's more customers, where's the next customer, where's the next customer opportunity. And sure, that starts from a marketing perspective. I'm a marketing guy by training and background. But to me, customers represent all the growth that if I were an operator, if I were a developer, if I were a manufacturer, if I were an entrepreneur, I would be searching for where are those customer groups that I can find, attract, attach, and ultimately really build a long-term relationship with. And to me, the growth factor in particular that I've seen clients and businesses that I've worked with bring to the table is that hard point that I think so many businesses have faced about a typical traditional customer relationship of attracting a new customer and selling them through and then post-sale service or follow-ups to it. Making that work in an online environment, an on-premise environment, a in-my-hand environment in terms of tablets and other sorts of tools, and of course, product specifications, product development. I feel like in the end, the work that I've done throughout all of this leads me back always to really being in touch with the customer to drive growth and then leading the customer because sometimes they don't know what they need next.
Yeah. So let's talk about these different customer groups that you are talking about. And obviously, we are going to be talking a lot more about the customer experience because that's your focus. Yes. So from the customer experience perspective, let's say if you look at different industries that you mentioned, do customer experience needs differ among those industries? For example, let's take an example of manufacturing versus distribution versus retail. Inside manufacturing, it could be, let's say, aerospace manufacturing. Aerospace manufacturer could have very different customer experience need than, let's say, F&B, food and beverage manufacturer. So what are some of the trends that you have seen from the customer experience perspective, and how do they vary across these sub-industries?
Certainly. I think the unifying theme to me has been across any of my industries, and I'll touch on some of those that you mentioned with an example or two, I think, just to illustrate. The recurring theme really has been that the sales process has changed from the way it once was. And a standard sort of, here's my feature benefits specifications, what do you want me to make? I'll make that for you kind of perspective. Yep. Is now not actually sufficient in a world in which everything is tailored, customized, personalized. There's some sort of value add quotient being added to it. And I speak about that across literally any category. In the case of retail businesses that I've worked with, Sam, each one of them has struggled with being commoditized. And that commoditization gets obviously in the big way of growth because there's always a competitor who will nip at your heels. There's always a competitor who will low bid you or overwhelm you as a customer with other aspects. And to me, if you get down once and for all to what you do uniquely, then and position that across all the different ways your customers will actually buy from the retailer or from the retail business, you're going to dissect it differently than you would in the old days, in which it might have been a one-to-one sales operation that then matched up with what manufacturing was making, and then obviously everything around service and support would take care of itself. Today, so much of B2B sales, so much of every category is driven on an online basis, not a one-to-one sales relationship. Those high touch moments when sales are really needed, those are the ones where you're really developing a custom solution. And that's a build off of your basic sort of purchasing patterns that happen in retail, sure, it's about outlets available, distribution points are made available, how close can I get to the customer? But at the end of the day, the customers or the clients that I've worked with in different retail phases, food and beverage or true shopping retail or real estate services, all of those really have recognized that to be in front of the customer and to put all the services and the touch points in their hands lets the customer control, lets the customer dictate more, lets the customer take advantage of all that you can bring in a solution, not just a variety of equipment or products. As another example, I worked once with a commercial kitchen manufacturer, design and manufacturer, and that business was led for years on the backs of an equipment solution that needed a range of service and solution and support. And the CEO in that case had the vision of wanting to flip that model and to really recognize that while he was a manufacturer, he was a distributor, he was in that kind of the logistics business, the fact is he offered solutions. He added brain power to how to design to fit the needs of the customer. And that dramatically changed the way the use of digital tools, content information, examples to really add value to the services or to the equipment solutions that were put on the table. It made a dramatic difference in helping drive growth by flipping the model to a solution orientation that was empowered by equipment solutions or manufacturing offerings or technology. And that was a growth path that changed the way the sales cycle, the sales ladder went for that business and reapproached ultimately the go-to-market strategy as well.
So interesting. I'm definitely interested in knowing more about this particular story, you know, how they flipped the model, what changes they made. Because if you look at our landscape from the industrial manufacturing and distribution perspective, majority of our audience are probably selling very commoditized product, and that's how they feel. They typically are very sales driven. They don't really have a lot of marketing background, and then they don't even have the e-commerce capabilities.
That's a very relatable problem, frankly, is that process of saying, I'm going to flip the model, right? I'm going to actually offer an idea and a solution that, oh, by the way, comes along with equipment or a manufactured product or a distribution model that supports your business. And in the case of the example I'm citing, the CEO rethought how to align account managers and product managers and to align that in a way that started from basically your solution should fit your business operation. Yeah. And supply, not just, hey, I've got a limited supply of equipment that fits your specs and I've got service windows to deliver that or logistics to distribute it to you and meet you wherever you are. This sort of our greens fees. What made the difference was sitting down with a customer to understand what that business's growth plan looked like and to fit a solution that was scalable. So not just manufacturing for the one location or for the one site in the case of a retail business, but to actually think about what are the next 10 going to look like? Are they clustered? Are they all in the same configurations from a design standpoint or from a requirements standpoint? And instead, designing it from listening to what do they want that business to be able to grow into? What's their next customer base look like? And then pausing and feeding all that information back to what a product solution set should look like versus just sort of working from what products do I have available and how that matches with it. Flipping that model made all the difference. And it didn't matter what categories we were talking about. It didn't even matter what types of restaurant or commercial kitchens or commercial food service enterprises he was serving. It was the hard pause of saying, what is your growth plan? And I'm going to fit that with a more tailored, a little higher touch selling process, but a more tailored solution of equipment, service, design, custom needs.
So in this particular case, and obviously I'm very interested in this particular topic because this is right aligned with our target audience. And there are going to be a lot of manufacturers that are going to have, let's say, similar offerings. Either they are going to have very customized offerings and they are customized to an extent that they cannot be configurable, right? Because correct. Each job that they are doing, probably each job is going to be different. So they need to have tons and tons of salespeople, and that process is probably not scalable. So I don't know if you had to do this in this particular example that you are citing, but let's say if you were the manufacturer who is doing, let's say, very highly engineered components and each project or the job that you are doing at this point of time, and you had to make the process scalable. As soon as you introduce any time manual intervention, obviously the process is not going to be as scalable. So you have to bring some system components there in terms of making the process scalable. And even if you have the organizational process where you are bringing people, the process from the people perspective needs to be scalable as well. So let's say if you are in the highly engineered component business, where when you look from one job to the next, they are not probably similar, but you have to, number one, make it personable. You have to make it customizable, but you have to also make it scalable.
Absolutely. So the interesting thing for me is I'm going to flip to a different example for you.
Okay.
So in the case of a chemicals manufacturer, for instance, and chemicals distributor, that line of business is very specific to standards and compliance and regulation and quality control.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of variability, obviously, in those offerings, right? They are very fixed.
Yeah.
And I think that's comparable to what you're describing as the situation that many might face about, look, I've got a pretty locked in product design or product manufacturing process, and putting that into a nice match for then what the solutions are for scalability purposes means I've got to actually figure out a way to package together what the right things are that come together. So in the case of the chemicals manufacturer, for instance, most of their end user conversations, which is where most of this always begins, Sam, is with an end user conversation. Describe to me what the end user is going to face or find helpful about this, or it's going to speed up the overall production capabilities. Describe what the end user case is going to be like. That means I can actually take a little bit of work and create that set of package solutions that come together in a product, some solution after that, some digital or electronic support to it, system support to it, something that makes the process work smoother for that end user case that they're going to face. For the chemical client I'm describing, for instance, there was a hard pause on categories of end users and understanding where those categories existed, and then taking a little bit of work, manpower hours, to create what likely were the 80-20 kind of rules of what solutions would they likely add in beyond the obvious purchase of this line of product. You know, what other equipment would they need to support that? What other equipment would they need to finish it and then obviously transport onwards to the ultimate customer, the ultimate manufacturer in this equation? And then stopping it one more step and going through content and information that supports that. The only way that we talked about for them to grow the business beyond just sheer numbers at top of the funnel prospects for their chemical lines was to design the solutions in such a way as to say, we're going to help you with your end users. And here are half a dozen of the key ways that we can do that beyond just the one product that might have brought you here to begin with. There's always sort of a lead product, and then there's the next ancillary products that go beyond that that really round it out for the end user. And the chemicals industry, for instance, starts with one key product, of course, but it is always supported and extended into other end user categories or other packaging forms or delivery forms. And that requires a more thoughtful approach up front that can be scaled, because that same set of questions is going to be asked across multiple customers.
Okay, so this would be an example of where you did more of the, let's say, product line extension, right? I mean, the product-based innovation where you had revenue coming from, let's say, one product, and now we have some supported products that are actually supplying more revenue, which is amazing, right? But the example that I had offered, that's slightly different. So in this particular case, this is going to be slightly more commoditized. Here, one product is not really different from the next. In my example, it was more of the highly engineered components. So for example, this is going to be an example of, let's say, a manufacturer of the parts, and they might be supplying to a machine manufacturer or something like that, where each part is going to be different. In this particular case, obviously, it is very personalized. The customer experience is very personalized because each part is different. So anytime the way the sales process is going to look is, let's say if the customer is coming, they are going to talk to the salesperson. They are going to do the entire analysis of whatever they are looking for. Then there is going to be a design process. Then the design goes to the customer and then they approve. And then finally it goes to the production, right? So that's how the highly engineered components work. But now this process is not scalable.
But to me, that whole process of ultimately doing the highly engineered and highly customized, highly specific sorts of solution sets needs the tool sets underneath of it so that, you know, to a certain degree, there's a whole lot of specification that's going to come very naturally out of a customer. I don't truthfully need to have the one-to-one conversation to go through the basics to really define that end user and ultimately to define all the different very specific requirements that tailor for that solution that I'm looking for that one customer, for that one user, for that one product that I'm going to ultimately make. So going through almost the rigor of customer profiling is something that obviously system tools really support. And that's what we've applied across a couple of the businesses and clients that I've worked with in these areas is how much will the customer knowingly and happily give you as profile information up front to get all of that sort of sorted out from a system standpoint, from a platform interaction standpoint, before we start to actually add the brain and the conversation to it. There's an awful lot when you're thinking about how to manufacture, design, and ultimately create the specifications that fit that one use, that one specific customer. And a lot of that, frankly, is get it out all on the table, categorize it the way we can through proper systems information, systems entry information from that customer, and then move into a value add dialogue where the sales team is coming into place or the product design team is coming into place than to take the raw material and actually move it. I know I'm speaking almost in a manufacturing term, but that is exactly what's needed is more raw information out of the customer to get to a point of tailoring it for the ultimate specifications. Otherwise, the scalability is difficult. I have to laugh at what you're describing. Of course, everything becomes a snowflake, right? Yeah. And you got to design one by one by one, and that's not scalable. So you've got to create scale easily in the areas in which most of it is information gathering, specification establishing, end use based, any of the other technical requirements that are going to accompany it, getting all of that out up front, but in a processed, automated fashion before you start to add the value add live conversation, live interaction, where now I'm really going to tailor and specify what you need.
Okay. Do you have any other stories where you have done either the personalization work or maybe the scalability or the growth was a problem and then you solved using either finding out some sort of scalable model for the product? Do you have any other stories?
Well, so one of the retail businesses that I work with has to do ultimately with supplying services to commercial properties.
Okay.
And everything that involves construction design, additional equipment support, additional system support, everything that is absolutely pertinent to the operation of a commercial property.
Yeah.
And their efforts were very much with the obstacles you're describing, Sam, meaning everything became a one-off conversation. It was very time intensive up front. Then the solution set would come together. And then obviously the timeline to actually produce, install, ensure that everything is at full operational levels and capacities, and off you go. And that the mission there with that particular client was to condense the upfront time in order to allow the actual installation, almost post-sale pieces of it, where operational success was the focus, to allow that to be where the humans, you know, the human beings and the value of the human beings' expertise and experience really could come in and help from a team-to-team perspective. The process of going through all the litany of requirements of design, manufacturing, installation needs, everything from power requirements to what kinds of protection and security needs would be accompanying it, any kind of a solution set for this particular commercial these commercial property customers, it meant that doing that had to be as quick almost as it could in order to really zero in on how to bring it in, install it, and service and support to make sure operational excellence was there. That meant standardizing. That meant a more automated approach to capturing all that information, not in an impersonal way, of course.
Yeah.
But in a way that allowed for, I might call it easy data dump, right?
Yeah,
easy
yeah.
collection of information from, in this case, the property management, the property design, and property construction teams, so that it wasn't so time intensive. Most of these solutions are variations on each other. Very few things were true snowflakes, to pick that up for a second. They were variations on a couple of key packages or a dozen different key packages of design configurations and installation models and specification models. And it changed dramatically for that business. It changed the course of their sales growth by 20 or 25% in the course of about a year, year and a half's investment in working through how to capture that information in a systematized way that meant, from the customer's perspective, it was faster to create a bid, a proposal, a specification list, faster to get to actual commitments to how the manufacturing process would work or the installation process would work, and then faster to actually getting the team on site to finish that work and to ensure that everything was up to standard and thereafter let it go and create the business production lines that it needed to. It was invaluable, but it was a laborious exercise, I've got to say, Sam, quite honestly, one that the client knew would take investment of time and a lot of thoughtware to get to what are those core sets of upfront inputs that were required. And once they were done, it meant so much speedier process of working with new customers, onboarding new projects, getting quicker to the ability to manufacture, install, and support. For them, it was well worth it to take a small trip to figure out how to automatize and systematize that information gathering, specification lockdown, variations and customization notes where they needed to, and be able to jump faster to the actual manufacturing installation and operational success.
Yeah, and one of the stories that I'm actually going to bring, Kirk, here, this is going to be related to similar discussion that we are having right now. And I get a lot of customers, especially in the construction space or the hybrid of construction and manufacturing. And they seem to believe that they don't necessarily have a product, even though they have a product. Okay, so from their perspective, because see, every business can have a product, even the service business, you can define a model, you can productize it, right?
Correct.
But they don't seem to believe that they have a product. And the reason for that is because they don't, or they are not able to find a common model to be able to create a product, and then they can tailor the experience around that product for that specific customer. Yes, the jobs are going to be different across the customers, but that does not mean that the underlying attributes or underlying specification cannot be a product. So what would be your thoughts on that? Do you believe that most businesses can have a product? And if they can, what would be some of the strategies to define a product model for these service-centric businesses?
I'm going to think about, or I'm going to talk to that through the lens of a client in the construction industry.
Okay.
And they believed that all they had initially was great relationships and great basic products that could be viewed as commodities. And in sitting down and planning what their growth plan could look like and should look like, we paused and said, you're selling more than equipment. You are selling the benefit of assurance of that construction going off as planned, going off as safe and secure and efficient as possible. Because at the end of the day, construction industry businesses live and die on, can they get the job done as spec'd, as originally spec'd or bid? And can they get it done on time, if not even faster? So that there is where margin lies. And in the case of this particular product and category, you know, we took a separate pause and said, yep, again, solution set building here. So are you selling just a bunch of equipment and construction equipment? No, you're actually selling the means by which that project gets done efficiently, on time, on budget. Those are important metrics when bidding and succeeding in that industry where the margins can make such a difference with a day's delay, a second day's delay, a delivery that isn't there. And making all of that run like a railway train was important. So it meant a lot of systematizing of logistics flow and managing it like it was a logistics business, not just managing it like it was obviously a manufacturing or an equipment sales business. Once they shifted that mindset, the investments in technology to support the customer's needs and the customer's ability to stay in touch with the business, and then obviously their ability to service the business when needed, as needed, almost on demand, which would be hard normally in that kind of business without the infrastructure of good processes and good technology systems. It allowed them to truly productize something that ordinarily probably would have been thought of as just the way you conduct the transactions and provide information to the customer. And instead, it became the value add proposition. It became the assurances of being able for that construction site, for that construction manager, for the business that, or the business and organization that was connected to, it became the means to count on it and therefore lock down expectations around budget and cost and delivery and labor. And those, of course, are the magic formulas, right, for managing growth and managing successful growth on a sustainable, scalable way.
Yeah. And I'm actually going to talk now this problem from the pricing perspective. Let's go back to the same example of the either construction or construction-focused manufacturing or slightly more engineered manufacturing. They are very similar business model in my mind. So let's say if they have the highly engineered products and they might believe that they are slightly more service-centric and they might not feel that they have a product. And if you don't have that, then your pricing is going to be obviously slightly more difficult, right? And if you think about the customer experience, in case of customer experience, pricing actually plays a very important role. Because, you know, let's say if your customer is coming to you and they are asking for a quote. So let's say if you are slightly more service-centric business, where you have to go every time and you have to, let's say, reconfigure your quote and you have to price it out. And then you go back to your customer, let's say that process is going to take 2 days before you can get approval from your manager, before your feasibility team looks at it, right? So this whole churn is what I call could actually affect the customer experience because number one, it actually delays your sales cycle. And number two, it's actually going to not provide the kind of confidence that customers nowadays look for when they transact with a business, right? So if you productize this, then if you productize this, then there's going to be a lot more confidence because you have probably slightly more standard pricing and it's actually not going to delay your sales process.
So one of the side benefits of what I just described for that construction business was getting rid of the choppiness in all that delivery process, hitting the site at the right time, logistics and distribution part of the business. It got rid of some of the choppiness in that and it got rid of the choppiness in the pricing conversation. Yeah. It was a really direct line, just like you're describing, Sam, it was a really direct line to supporting a pretty standard, we're not playing discount games, we're not sort of, you know, matching competitors, all those things that we all face in business, right? Well, you know, when you can provide assurance, when you can truly say what you mean and mean what you say and deliver when you say, those things have value. And selling assurance and control to a business that often is not in full control and circumstances change, speed slows down and weather slows down and delivery slow down or labor gets sideways somehow or another, the more you can put in control in the hands of that user, the better off. And it meant that what was already a pricing strategy that was not built around, well, we'll beat our competitor, which many businesses are built on that pricing model.
Yeah.
They were not built on that pricing model, but it meant when they got through that good work of setting up better processes up front like that with their customers and clients, it meant that there was even greater support to the way the pricing strategy would hold. And there was less choppiness realized out of that. Prices held better. Margins held better. But it also held better because as a business, they were managing the business tighter. They were managing it tighter for the benefit of the customer. They were managing the business tighter for their own business you know, metrics and revenue. And so holding the price meant better margin. It meant better consistency in the pricing strategies. It gave them just a better way to say, no, 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 we really are the ones you can count on for not only what you bid and we propose and we see through that process, but all the inevitable variables that will come up even once we start. Once a job starts, once the production starts, once the installation starts, there are always those last minute variables that come into play. And again, if you build the business model from one of assuring customers that all that's going to go away and we have the means to pull from our kit, you know, our kit of parts in terms of solution, equipment solutions or added services or quicker service or whatever else picks up the problem for them, all the better support for the pricing strategy.
Okay, amazing, Kurt. That's it for today. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts by any chance?
The only thing I always want to come back to is if we just always start from not only, you know, what problems are we really solving for the customer? And I don't mean just the product solution or the delivery solution, but if you really solve for problems like assurance, quality, safety, controllables, the moment you elevate that problem statement just for a split second, typically it illuminates the way to people, processes, technologies, systems to speed up what you can and to allow the value add conversation to really add growth and add more attention to your relationship with the customers and help them grow their businesses. It's certainly the way I've approached any business, from one that is manufacturing and distribution oriented to one that is more tech and SaaS oriented to one that is retail and consumer facing. They all benefit from that hard work of just pausing and thinking through the customer experience and where we really add benefit and value to it, as well as then ultimately get rid of all the noise and the choppiness and the mistakes and the problems.
Yeah. And my personal takeaway from this conversation is going to be your customer experience is much bigger than just thinking it as customer service. Customer
experience is very different. I couldn't have said it better, Sam. Thank you. But it absolutely is. That customer experience starts from the moment they even think about a need, or they think about a project, or they think about what they need to supply. And it goes all the way through ultimately to post-purchase, post-installation, post-production line, post-manufacturing. It goes to all the way down to that end. I find that growth comes when you think your way all the way through to that end point, because it helps you loop back to another purchase, helps you loop back to another project, as opposed to kind of just stopping with, I got the sale done and we're on to the next.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for this powerful conversation. I totally enjoyed it, Kirk.
Sam, it's been a ball. I love talking about growth. It's good.
Absolutely. It's always fun. All right, thank you so much, Kirk, again.
Thank you again. I appreciate it, Sam.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Kirk, view his detailed bio and introductory video at chiefoutsiders.com. It's chiefoutsiders.com/contact-Kirk, K-I-R-K, -Thompson. It's T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Mark Jaffe from Strategic Growth Consulting, who discusses how macroeconomic trends impact consumer behaviors. Also, the interview with Enrico Parodi, who discusses the sales organization's key components. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.